Hi, hi. You're listening to the Corporate Cleanse podcast, where we talk about the pros and cons of corporate life and how I, a former fancy executive, hit full burnout and am now on a journey to explore how we all can maintain our sanity and sense of self, all while climbing the corporate ladder. I hope you enjoy listening along with me and know that everyone needs, occasionally, a corporate cleanse. I recently did an Instagram poll for topics, and y'all had some spicy topics, which honestly I've been avoiding a bit. Like, oh, the feminine urge to only cover pleasant, non-controversial topics, right? And yes, there were some softballs, but most of the suggestions I got were really tough and painful subjects, the things that no one talks about, the things that no one wants to talk about because they're spicy, they're controversial. Which makes me realize more and more that we are all on the absolute brink. Like, things aren't just, yeah, it's been a tough 2 weeks. Like, things are dire. Corporate peeps are not doing well. It's a really hard environment right now. And so I want to tackle one that feels most relevant right now. So let's catch up a little bit on how CEOs have been faring in the news. Short answer, not well. Not well at all. There was the MillerKnoll CEO that showed just sort of the worst case of advantage blindness, of being so rich and so privileged that it doesn't even cross her mind that others don't have the luxury of not caring about their personal take-home pay. Like, even though she doesn't either, because she collected $4 million in bonuses in 2022, she doesn't think that it's being in pity city to only think about your take-home pay. Even though she cares about her take-home pay. That's why she was pressuring the company to think about their revenue goal. Then one that comes from Utah, which is just is so cringy, James Clark, the CEO of Clearlink, which is shocking, but also not surprising. Like, when I was told this story, I was like, I am shocked, but I'm not necessarily surprised. Everything sort of from the angle of his camera on the pulpit to his sort of like crazed but gentle voice gave me serious PTSD from church talks. Like, I was like, this is a church leader talking to me and guilting me about something. But he covers just an impressive amount of just terrible accusations of his employees. One saying that being a full-time caregiver and a full-time worker is neither fair to the company or fair to the children, which is maddening for me, especially. I was a single mom for a while there. Like, what was I supposed to do? Not work? Not take care of my child? Like, that has so many implications. And he uses this weird equivocating language where he praises an employee for selling a family dog, but also says it breaks his heart. This type of equivocating language is littered in his speech, which also ignited a lot of apologists saying things like, well, he said he broke his heart. He said it broke his heart. Like, he actually doesn't condone that behavior. He brought it up as an example. Like, it was a bullet point that he wrote on his outline. So he wanted to say it. So for all the people that are like, oh, it didn't seem like he really supported it, he brought it up. That equivocating language drives me bananas. Vice wrote, additionally, he said it could be argued that having a full-time job and serving as a primary caregiver is neither fair to the employee nor fair to the children. Now, I don't necessarily believe that, he clarified, but I do believe that the rarest of full-time caregivers can also be productive and full-time employees at the same time. He proceeded to say he believed the data would support this, quote, in time, though he noted that data can be warped and manipulated to prove any one particular point. Like, what? that equivocating language of like brings up a point, but then like doesn't necessarily directly support it, then brings up another point, and then he's like, but data can be mid. What? This language should be illegal. Honestly, it should be illegal. It says, it's like saying something really shitty and then saying, I don't necessarily believe it, but I do, and I'm going to bring it up. I think it's how so many people, especially politicians, and now that we're seeing corporate CEOs, get away with saying shitty things because they equivocate. And so you can't quite pinpoint them, but it's shitty. It's shitty, and you leave that meeting feeling shitty. And I'm just like, where are your PR teams? Like, through all of these scenarios, I'm like, where are your PR teams? I'm just mystified. Whenever I think about mystified, whenever I say mystified, I think of that How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, where there's that best friend that's like too clingy and she's constantly being broken up with. And she's like, I'm mystified. I'm mystified. That's how I felt watching these things. I was like, I am mystified because either these CEOs didn't engage their PR teams before getting on a company-wide call that could be recorded, or got speaking points from their PR teams and were just straight up like, no, I got it. Like, horrifying. And I can just imagine, I feel so badly for these PR and marketing teams. I personally have done a lot of CEO communications. I've drafted up so many company emails. I've prepped CEOs over and over and over and over again about their speaking points and their speeches. I've gone through like 40 takes of a video recording because the CEO wasn't happy with how his hair looked. Like, I have begged CEOs to not get on all hands calls and just wing it. Like, I've been like, please, please do not go off the cuff. Like, you're speaking to the entire company, you're the CEO, do not go off the cuff. So let's all take just like, I don't know, a second of silence for these people. These poor PR and marketing teams that were just like, oh, you're just going to wing it, aren't you? Oh, please don't. Oh, okay, you're going for it. You're going to say it. Oh, God, he said that. And then have to draft up like response plans. Like, I really feel for these teams. And I love the corporate responses. I saw kind of the aftermath of these horrible moments, and the responses are always, it was taken out of context. I love this answer because, like, what absolute bullshit. Like, tell me, what context would make those comments better? Like, when you say it was taken out of context, like, tell me what the context would have been to make those a-okay things to say. There is none. But I think companies use this sweeping, it was taken out of context, because it's vague and it's sweeping and it allows people to slip out of accountability without providing any real information. So if you are drafting a response plan, just use, it was taken out of context. It's like a quick get out of jail free card. There is a steady stream of toxic leadership and toxic CEO stories in the news. And those are just the ones that make it to the news, right? Dealing with toxic leadership is one of the hardest things to go through because there is not a lot that can be done. And it's high stakes. Like, if you are going to try and do something, calling out a CEO or a senior leader is high stakes. That's just scary. So there's not a lot that can be done. So the brutal truth is there really isn't a direct path to address toxic leadership. There just isn't. That is why it ends up in all of these subversive ways. It's reported anonymously to the news. It's written in scathing anonymous Glassdoor reviews. It's employee trauma bonding at lunch. It's books written after the employee leaves, right? After they've probably signed their release agreement, 12 months has passed, and now they can talk about it, right? It's all hands secretly recorded and distributed to news sources all anonymously. Because there are not direct paths to hold toxic leadership accountable, it comes out as subtweets, right? It's all subversive. It's all secretive, but it is there. So today's leader or today's episode is about how to deal with toxic leadership or corporate speak. In this episode, we explore strategies for personal growth and professional success in the face of challenging leadership environments. But it's really just how to cope. It's how to deal with your toxic ass leadership. In today's episode, I'm just focusing on toxic leadership. CEOs, senior executive team. I do plan to do a part two about dealing with toxic coworkers, but today, let's just talk about toxic leadership. There's enough there to fill our time for the day. What is toxic leadership? From a Forbes article, toxic leadership is a combination of self-centered attitudes, motivations, and behaviors that have adverse effects on subordinates, the organization, and performance. Toxic leaders consistently use dysfunctional behaviors to deceive, intimidate, coerce, or unfairly punish others to get what they want for themselves. That is the definition of toxic leadership. So my experience, I've been working again since I was 16, but I've been in my sort of professional career for about 13 years. I don't count Domino's as my professional work experience. I have worked at 4 different companies ish in that time frame, and leadership was a little toxic at all 4 of them. Cue the audience saying, maybe you're the problem, Jen. Which, like, okay, fair. See episode number 3. Okay, I've already talked about my accountability journey, and today is just blame. Today is not about me, it's about toxic leadership. But at every company I've worked at, there has been some level of toxicity. Because remember, corporate life is just endless group projects with other damaged, broken humans. So toxicity is bound to be, well, it's bound to just be anywhere you are, especially when those damaged, broken humans are given a lot of power and money. Company hierarchies give certain people power over other people, and oftentimes enough money to make them just completely out of touch. Completely out of touch with the typical employee. So chances are, wealthy, powerful, CEOs are a little toxic. Like, the chances are good, the majority. My experience has mostly been in growth stage, venture-backed tech companies, like startup through Series C, Series D. 3 of the 4 companies that I have worked for have been run by founder CEOs. So these are companies that are started by a founder, and then as the company grows, that founder maintains the seat of CEO. So you can imagine there was some toxicity at the leadership level because this person started the company and then now is trying to, like, operationalize and run it when they're not necessarily a trained CEO. They're just a founder. And at every company I've worked at, there was some kind of toxicity at the leadership level, whether that be nepotism, abuse of power, extreme out of touchness, fear-based leadership tactics, micromanaging, bullying, gaslighting. And with toxic leadership, you typically see, so if you're wondering, like, do I have toxic leadership? If you do, you probably know, but you typically see a lot of crazy volatility and changes to the leadership team, like turnover, which are always like, this person is leaving to focus on family and we wish them the best in their next step. If you see a corporate communication that says that, if you're like, so-and-so is leaving the company to focus on their family and their life and we wish them all the best and they're going to do great things. If you see this, there is tea. There is always tea. When an executive departs, it's never to focus on family. Like, never. I've never seen that in my life. There is tea about that departure, and this is sort of the corporate watered-down human resources version of why that person is leaving. There is no way that that person is leaving to focus on family. So there is tea, and that's just a fact. So this episode isn't going to be about how to avoid toxic leadership, because there is no avoiding it. When you move jobs, You are just trading the devil you know for the devil you don't. So we're going to focus rather on how to navigate, how to deal with, how to cope, and how to not be just wrecked by toxic leadership. Because I think giving language to these things really helps. Giving us language to identify and deal with toxic leadership is really the key to not losing our minds, not being wrecked by it. So let's talk a little bit about the history and the reality of toxic leadership. Too long didn't read. Toxic leadership has been around for a long time and it's not going anywhere. Early in my career, I used to think, I was like so bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and naive. I was like, I'll be the one to change it. I'll be the one to turn this culture around. I'll help this company focused on DE&I. I'll be an example to women. I'll help this CEO see his blind spots. And I'll leave this place better than I found it. That is how I always go into companies. I'm like, I'm going to change it. I'm going to be better. This is how I truly felt. And I remember stumbling upon an Adam Grant quote. Before taking a job offer, it's worth asking, do I want to become more like the people here? You can aspire to change the culture of a group, but don't overlook how the culture will change you. Few of us are immune to the values of the people around us. I do like Adam Grant and his self-awareness. Like, he's trying in his like three-phrase haiku style of writing punchy business tips. Like, I'm here for it. I like him because he gives me language to apply to my turmoil. This was a huge realization for me. I went into companies thinking I could change the culture, but ultimately, that culture changed me. And I wasn't super scrutinizing about the team I was joining because it was just the next thing. It was the next great opportunity. It was the next pay bump. It was more responsibility. It was more opportunity. It was more money. It was more title. It was whatever. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to do that. Without even really thinking about, is this the type of person I would want to do high stakes work with? So going into a company knowing that I am more likely to become like them rather than the other way around, I would have been way more scrutinizing and evaluating who are these humans and how are they broken and can I tolerate their flavor of brokenness or will this end up costing me thousands in therapy? Like if you go into the next company and you're interviewing right now, ask yourself at least that. How much therapy is this going to cost me? Right? No matter how much you think you can change the culture, how much you can go in and fix it and help those people at that company, more likely than not, they're going to change you more than you change them. Truth is, James Clark is still CEO of Clearlink. Andy Owen is still CEO of MillerKnoll. Elon Musk is still CEO of Twitter. Like during the height of the Twitter takeover by Elon Musk, I was on Twitter all the time. It was not a good time. It was not a good time for me. It was not a good time for anyone. I wasn't very healthy. And I was just like scrolling through Twitter and I was just with the rest of everyone. I was like outraged. The mistreatment, the firing people without telling them, firing them over a tweet. Like it was insane stuff. But every day I would wake up and Elon Musk was still the CEO of Twitter. There is no accountability frameworks for these high-powered CEOs. There isn't. And if I dwell on that for too long, I go crazy. I go crazy because, like, this was a couple months where I was just like, surely, you know, with millions of people tweeting at him and making memes, like, surely someone's going to hold this person accountable. Never happened. And likely won't happen. CEO pay right now is 399 times that of their employees. 399. During the height of tech layoffs, a Business Insider, a spicy Business Insider article came out. And I was like, bless this writer. It came out about how all CEOs right now get all of the perks, but none of the accountability. When companies aren't hitting targets, employees are cut. But not CEOs, not CFOs. They're not getting cut. Employees are getting cut. So I think it's called Tech CEO Screwed Up. That's the title of the article if you want to go read it. It's great. It's a great breakdown of the role of a CEO, about how they get all the upside, right? 399 times the average pay of an employee. And then when the company doesn't perform well, they get to just cut employees and then, you know, smile and keep their position. It's a great breakdown. I highly recommend reading it. But again, nothing has changed. And yes, there have been CEOs and other senior leadership that got. There was a Utah CEO that made really unhinged comments at a conference and then sent out an anti-Semitic rant to all of his contacts in his contact book. Like, the board obviously asked him to step down. Like, something happened there. Theranos, Elizabeth Holmes, like, there was some accountability. But the reality is, things have to be extreme. Things have to be extreme for CEOs to be held accountable. That's the reality. Things have to be just extreme and undeniable for there to be accountability. And we need to recognize that these extreme stories are just the tip of the iceberg. The shit we see, and underneath that stuff is 90% of the iceberg of, like, what goes on every day at companies that is tolerated and unspoken and just sort of, like, whispered about in Glassdoor reviews. Like, the high profile examples we see in the news are just the tip of the iceberg. I had a friend who worked at a company where senior leadership was really toxic, and there was a lot of executive turnover. Like, executives were constantly joining and leaving, and just crazy things happening at this company. The board was very honest about what the role of the board was. Because in these cases, I'm like, well, of course the board's going to do something. Toxic CEO, the board's going to do something. So even when we think that enough Glassdoor reviews, enough veiled LinkedIn posts, enough Medium articles, enough news coverage, enough employee turnover, enough executive turnover, something will change, the board will step in. Toxic leadership is not held accountable, not even by boards. And I thought this was really interesting for me, because I think I always thought that I was like, boards will step in. And this story from a friend was like, the board can't a lot of the times. But they just sort of are like, this is what we can do and this is what we can't do. So not even boards can hold CEOs accountable, which I at one point I thought was their entire job. I thought that was like the checks and balances to make sure that there wasn't, like, I don't know, unrighteous ruling. But that's not the case either. So fanatical, egotistical, extreme CEOs will always exist. And some even argue that you have to be borderline, a borderline sociopath and narcissistic to be a CEO. I don't agree with this at all, and I hate that stereotype, but it's what we as society have tolerated. It's these people that we as society have tolerated to run the private sector. And no major change is happening soon. Wow, Jen, this is a real downer of an episode. The line between realistic and pessimistic, I guess, is pretty thin on this topic. Oh, so let's identify types of toxic leadership. Let's give language to the painful scenarios that you might be facing. And by the way, you are not crazy. If you are needing to hear this topic right now, toxic leadership isn't benign, and you aren't just overreacting. You're not just being too sensitive. You're not just emotional. Toxic leadership creates environments of fear and low morale, and that is traumatic. That's trauma. If you spend 40 plus hours in this environment, that is traumatic. You're putting your body through trauma. Brené Brown says that the five things that make up a toxic culture are disrespect, non-inclusivity, unethical behavior, cutthroat behavior, and abuse. She emphasizes, this is what I thought was really interesting, she emphasizes that these are non-compartmentalizable. That might not be a word. I don't know what the right word is. But meaning you can't keep those at work. Those five toxic traits of a toxic company, you can't just separate those. They creep into every aspect of your life, your self-worth, your security, your safety. So you aren't being just too sensitive. Like if you are experiencing toxic leadership, you're not crazy and you're not overreacting. Toxic leadership led to the worst year of my life. The worst burnout, the worst depression, the worst feelings about myself, the worst way I showed up for the people in my life. It's not to be underestimated. So we can talk about sort of the archetypes of toxic leaders, the traits of toxic leaders, signs of toxic leadership, but I'm going to boil them down to what I've typically seen in my experience. There are tons of ways we can categorize these, but these are just sort of how I categorize them from my experience. Number one type of toxic leader, I call the fragile leader. This is that typical egomaniac, the narcissistic leader. These are the leaders who I call them like know for sure leaders. Like, quote, they know for sure. They cannot show any weakness. And so they're big and they're loud and they're authoritarian. So no one looks too closely. These are the because I said so leaders. These are the leaders that often wield the, well, I'm chief marketing officer, so I make the call. This can look like asserting power over people. Once I put together a user conference, I put together the speaker lineup, and the celebrity speakers at the time requested no meet and greets. Like it was during COVID and they were like, I don't want to meet. And that's typically what happens. Like if you get a celebrity speaker, you usually get to meet them and the leadership team gets to meet them and you get to schmooze. And that's usually what happens. But during COVID, there was some lines drawn. A leader of the company demanded a photo with the said speaker with their family member, saying, either you make it happen or I will. And I had made a commitment to this speaker to keep them safe and to respect what they wanted to do with their body, which was not to meet people. And this person used their power and authority to coerce me, to force me into compromising that, to compromising the commitment I made and also the compromise that I made, or compromising this person's safety and what this person wanted to do with their body. I was forced to compromise, and that is an abuse of power. That is asserting power over people to get what you want. Leadership using their power to force you to compromise your boundaries, that is abuse, hands down. Leadership that understands that this job dictates your financial safety, your career progression, your reputation, and then uses that against you is abuse. It's abuse of power, and it's abuse, and it's a toxic trait. This fragile leader also can show a lot of narcissism. This is sort of excessive self-importance and a constant need for admiration. They prioritize their own interests and personal glory over the well-being of their team or the organization. They're often manipulative, they lack empathy, and exploit others to achieve their goals. These leaders and how to spot them, they don't share spotlight. These are usually leaders who are the only ones to talk during company all hands. So if your company only has one person speaking for the entire leadership team, that's a little narcissistic, right? This is usually to a person that always has to be the one to say it, has to be the person to send the email, has to say the thing, has to make the announcement. They don't share spotlight. They don't share glory. These leaders need to have their voice heard in every avenue. They don't defer to others. They don't ask questions, and they take offense if you are not fanatical about their thoughts. Another thing I've seen, these are typically leaders that create those company values without any input. This is just the way they think and it's best. I see this too in leaders. I've had one leader use books. They'd weaponize reading books. Like they'd be like in a conversation, oh, have you read so-and-so book? And if you'd say you hadn't, they would like check in on you later and be like, so did you read that book that I recommended? And you're like, well, no, I didn't. And they sort of weaponize this of like anything that they recommend to you has to be done, and they'll hold it against you if you don't. This can also look like micromanaging, excessive control, scrutinizing every aspect of your work. They don't trust you. They try to over-control their perception in the company, so they over-control every aspect of your work, the team, everything. This can often look like those return-to-work initiatives. Over-controlling CEOs love return-to-work because they want to see you. They want you 5 feet from their desk so they can see you in your seat doing work. Where I draw the line on this one, like, I think people should work however they want to work. Where I draw the line is when CEOs' own personal issues drives people to work against what they want their environment to work in. Like, I'm sorry you hate being home because you have 9 kids and it's loud and chaotic. Like, that's not my problem. I want to work from home. My home isn't chaotic. Return to work initiatives, that's where I draw the line. They never feel like it's best for the employees. It's usually just to give the CEO back their sense of power and authority, and happens to reflect a lot of what the CEO feels like his home situation or their home situation or her home situation is a reflection, and then they sort of mandate that across the company. These fragile leaders also don't take a lot of feedback. They don't collaborate. They don't show empathy. They are definitely out of touch, like the Miller-Knoll CEO, about like that some of their employees may be really struggling financially. It's out of touch. They have sort of this like need for admiration. I see this in leaders that do like long soliloquies. You know those leaders where you're like in a meeting and they sort of like, you can almost see them stepping up on a soapbox and you're like, oh boy, here we go. Buckle up for 15 minutes of just uninterrupted ranting. These soliloquies, getting up on a pulpit to wax on and on about the latest ism, right? Like the latest thing, the podcast episode they listened to and now they have to tell everybody like it's their original thought. They read a Forbes article and then are regurgitating it back to you. Please. I hate these soliloquies. Like my eyes just like roll back in my head. And those are the times I'm grateful for Botox in my life. I really am. Because if my face wasn't like a little frozen, the expressions that I would make on these long soliloquies. Fragile leaders also have an utter lack of self-awareness or self-exploration. Like, these are leaders that know for sure they're a great leader. Know for sure they're not being sexist. Know for sure that they're being fair. Know for sure that they're not racist. Know for sure they don't have unconscious bias. To identify this type of toxic leader, I love these two questions. Number one, after encountering this person, do I feel oppressed, humiliated, or otherwise worse about myself? Do I leave these interactions or town halls with this leader feeling awesome? And number two, does this person target people who are less powerful than him or her or them? Do you witness this leader being so sparkly to board meetings and sparkly, you know, to board members, sparkly to investors, sparkly to other leaders, but kicked down at the rest of the company? That's typically the questions that I ask when I'm identifying a fragile leader. Okay, the number two toxic leader, I call this the cutthroat leader. These are leaders who are constantly vying, like playing political games, manipulation, all because they are insecure, because they have something to prove. A subset of this cutthroat leader I see as bullying leaders. Like, bullying leaders love shame and blame. They use every opportunity to wield this. They call people out publicly. They undermine their team members publicly. They throw others under the bus. When things aren't going well, they want everyone to feel badly. When goals aren't hit, they often lead to character assassination. This is a good one. If your leader has started to criticize you and not your performance, this is a bullying tactic. This is a bullying leader. Like, instead of just saying like, hey, your work has been faltering, like you haven't made enough calls, like commenting on your performance and then commenting or picking apart who you are, like, oh, you're too nice. Oh, you're such a pushover. You aren't a good communicator. Like, once they start assassinating who you are and your character, that is bullying. Straight up. I see this a lot in sales because sales comes from a really competitive driven place, which is a good thing, I guess. Like, but there's also this like bully coach mentality to this competition. I I remember a leader once played a video for us, and it was like a rallying call. It was like we had a really big revenue number to hit the coming quarter, and they were like, I'm going to play this inspirational video for you. The intention was good. I'm going to be real. The intention was good. I can see where this person was coming from. But it was this weird video of this football player. Okay, it was like back in the 80s, so toxic already. It was this football player that wasn't reaching his potential. So his coach has him, like, blindfolds him, which, again, God, what am I watching? Blindfolds this player, has him carry another player on his back, and bear crawls to the end of the field. And the coach is just, like, screaming at him. Like, every foot is just, like, screaming. Like, you can do this. You can push harder. Like, don't give up. Don't be a quitter. And he reaches the end, and it's supposed to be like, see, you had it in you the entire time. And it's supposed to be this, like, great moment. But the video, and you end up kind of walking away from it, and you're like, that guy just got bullied. Like, that was just emotional and verbal abuse to get someone to perform. So it's that kind of like, no, I'm just motivating. And it's like, are you motivating or are you bullying, in a weird toxic coach player mentality? Number three, the third type of toxic leader. I call this one the corporate sheen leader. This is one that I have started to identify that isn't talked about a lot. This is the kind to your face, always says the right thing, always is professional, always is calm, but is subversive in their manipulation. They avoid open conflict, but use subtle undermining behaviors like withholding information, speaking about you poorly in private. You never know where they stand because they tell everyone what they want to hear. They don't speak plainly, but are kind of behind the scenes making moves. Like, you don't really know how to trust this person, but you don't know why, because they say all the right things and they seem calm and they have a gentle smile and you're like, this feels okay. This is an especially toxic leader because you want to trust this person. Like, you really think you can trust this person, that you've found a safe place, and then you're bamboozled later on because this person actually was never in your corner. This also can sometimes look like toxic positivity. I find this corporate sheen leader always makes you feel like the crazy one, right? When you're like, I am really struggling. Like, I am burnt out. My mental health is struggling and I want to quit. And they're like, well, are things really that bad? Right? Like, I think there's a lot of silver lining in what you just said. That's toxic positivity and it's terrible. And the corporate sheen leader is perfect at toxic positivity. Number four, I call this one the resigned leader. This is a real one. Like, this was one of those people that you were like, I could have grabbed a beer with this person. They typically understand all the drama, all the toxicity, all the unfairness. They see it, they know it, they accept it. They know and see this and they validate your concerns. But they do not use their voice to make change. They don't want to rock the boat. I have been this leader many times, and I've seen these leaders many times. These leaders are created because of a toxic environment. They were good leaders at one point, but then they are also afraid. So they don't champion things. They don't champion you. They don't question things. They don't use their position to help you. They don't go out on a limb. A subset of this type of leader, which again is created by this toxic environment, are the inconsistent leaders. These are leaders that lack clear direction. They frequently change their minds. They frequently change expectations and priorities. So if you're feeling like whiplashed by your manager about changing priorities, changing what you're working on, they were created by a toxic environment and they are afraid. They're afraid and they are trying to play favorites. They're trying to avoid conflict because they've probably entered conflict and it hasn't gone well for them. So they're like, I'm just going to avoid it altogether. Inconsistent leaders cause division. They lack trust with their teams. They equivocate. Remember we talked about that just maddening, equivocating language where someone says something and then takes it back and then says it again. They don't commit and they often change priorities for their team last minute. These leaders constantly shift priorities because they just they don't want to put up the fight. They don't want to battle. They don't want to go up against, you know, a toxic CFO or a toxic CRO or a toxic CEO. And they let the company sway their opinions of their team and of the work. So those are the four. Those are the four that I typically see most toxic leaders fall into, one of those. So I want to shift now into how to deal. Because again, you can't avoid it. Toxic leaders are likely anywhere you're going to be. And there's not a lot you can do about it. And you are going to hate me for this next segment, but you only have a couple of options, really. Number one is learn to deal with it without it wrecking you. Number two is to say something. And number three is to leave. So if you have chosen door number one, learning how to deal with toxic leadership without it wrecking you. So my initial urge was to make this as professional as possible. Again, the feminine urge to make this non-controversial. So the first one I was going to talk about was accountability. I was going to be like, is it really toxic leadership? Have you really done enough self-work to identify? Like, no, I'm not going to do that anymore. Chances are you do have some toxic leadership. And I don't want to make this episode so like buttoned up and professional that it's out of touch. Like, let's just assume you have toxic leadership. It's not you. It's not you being oversensitive. Like, you have toxic leadership. So let's be real. Let's talk about acceptance. Radical acceptance. Accepting that you cannot change others, nor is it your responsibility. You are right that there is toxicity and you have to accept that you can't change others. Like, that CEO is 45. You're not changing that person. That person's baked. That person is fully baked. That person has 45 years of personality disorders. Like, you're not going to fix that. You're not going to change it. Once you accept it, once you truly accept, your mind stops dwelling on identifying it so much. I did this. Once I was aware of a toxic leader, I would sit there in a meeting and I'd be like, that's toxic, that's toxic, that's toxic, that's narcissism, that's toxic. And I would get myself all riled up and I would spend all my energy identifying it. Like, that's this personality disorder, that's this toxic behavior. But really, like, good job, Jen, you identified toxicity, gold star, but now what? Accepting means you notice it, but you stop fixating on it. Once you accept that you can't change anything, it's crazy how your mind starts to give up on this fixation. Like, you're like, I got it. I found the scavenger hunt of this person's personality disorders. I don't need to find anymore because it's where we're at. And you start to give up on noticing and cluing into all these things and just getting all riled up about it. It has also helped me to separate the toxic person from the toxic actions. Labeling someone as like narcissistic, sociopathic doesn't really help. And it just makes you feel more powerless. But identifying the toxic behaviors that are affecting you, right? Is there bullying? Is there nepotism? Is there favoritism? Like, how are these behaviors affecting you? And sometimes, like, if you've, again, chosen this door number one, sometimes the answer is emotional dissociation, which I hate to say, but this was really powerful for me. Like, I don't support this person or who they are or their core beliefs or their leadership style. I don't support this person. I don't like this person at all. Or just generally the person they choose to be. I think of The Office and like Michael and Toby. I hate so much about the things you choose to be. That's how I think all the time when I encounter a toxic leader. I'm like, I just hate everything. But I support their role. I have emotionally dissociated myself from this person and I support their role. A coworker gave me this tip and I love it. It is gold. They said they think about it like serving the king. Like, I serve at the pleasure of the king. That's how a lot of support staff works. I serve at the pleasure of the majesty, or his majesty, or her majesty. Like, I don't like this king, but I serve at the pleasure of the king role. The role, the sort of hierarchical role. Because honestly, if your toxic CEO gets the boot, you're still going to have to serve someone as the CEO or as the senior leader, as the CMO, whatever. So accepting that that role is just supporting that role helps. That helped me. It was like, okay, I don't have to like this person. I don't have to agree with their core beliefs to still support this person acting in this role of CEO or acting in this role of CFO or acting in this role of senior leader. I serve at the pleasure of. It was a really helpful way for me to emotionally disassociate. And this can also help you develop a much needed skill. If you're going to work in corporate America, because again, corporate world is just group projects with broken humans, you need to develop emotional resilience. Think of it as like, what do I get to practice? This was also a tool that I used when I was like, narcissism, I can't handle it. I would ask myself, I'd be like, what do I get to practice today? What do I get to practice? I get to practice breathing. I get to practice regulating my nervous system when it feels like I'm being attacked by a bear because this person is a psychopath. What do I get to practice today? Really helped me sort of turn inward, stop focusing on the toxicity around me, and just thinking, what do I get to practice today? What do I get to hone about myself? What do I get to try about my emotional resilience? I'll say this quickly because I don't love it, but I'm going to say it quickly. Empathy also helps. Like, being a CEO is hard. Even saying it is so cringy. I'm like, that CEO is getting paid 399 times than me and their job is hard. It kind of is. Like, senior leadership is hard. I've thought about that a lot. I'm like, would I like to be a CEO? And I'm like, one negative glass door review about me and I'd crumble. I'd be like, why don't you like me? Like, I don't know if I could handle it. I really don't. So like, having a little empathy that humans are just humans and recognizing that fear often drives toxic behavior, right? That helped me. Whenever someone was acting toxic, I was like, what kind of fear is this based in, right? Is it fear of being irrelevant? Is this fear of failure? Is this fear of not being liked? Is this person just not like themselves? That helped me separate. Identifying what fear was driving this behavior helped me separate and helped me have a little bit more empathy for the difficulty that leaders have. You know, I was a C-level leader and my job was hard. And again, that's so privileged. Like, I had a great title, I had great pay, but it was hard. It was emotionally hard to feel responsible for this group of humans and how much they get paid and how their career goes. Like, it is hard. And then I would say, lastly, seek support in dealing with toxic leadership. Like, your therapist, counseling, mentors, sounding boards, professional coaching, or like just your workplace bestie. Like, just find somebody to trauma bond with, because that toxic leader likely isn't going anywhere. Like, even though you know that that leader is toxic, the board's not going to step in. No one's going to step in. And so all you can do is accept it. If you have chosen number two to say something, this really is a downer episode. I'm going to say it's real. It's a realistic episode, okay? Choosing door number two to say something is risky. This is assuming that your HR team is there to protect employees and not the company, which is a big assumption. And it's unfortunately not something I've seen. I have worked with many wonderful HR leaders, wonderful humans. But at the end of the day, they are company protection disguised as human resources. So from my experience, this is what I have seen the majority of the time. You say something and you end up being the one to leave the company. Like, that's just it. I wish that I could say something different. I wish that I could say, like, you say something and then there's change and the company becomes better. Typically you end up leaving, either by choice or you experienced, I don't know, retaliation. A leader hears about it, you get retaliation and you leave. You get let go, you get reorged. I see this a lot where people are like, I said something controversial about a leader and I got, quote, reorged. It's pretty much being shoved into a corner until you leave. You get villainized, or like nothing happens, right? Like, nothing happens. You just sacrificed a little bit of your reputation and no accountability was had. Or you get labeled, or you get blacklisted. So if you choose this route, I mean, first, document. Document every single moment that you see. Document meticulously. Seek counsel from, like, I don't know, lawyers, people you can trust, people you can actually trust, right? Not that corporate sheen leader that you may not be able to trust. Someone you can actually trust, and be ready for the outcomes, good or bad, and accept that it could be bad, but it also could be good. So just having that sort of like Zen moment of like, whatever happens, I'm okay with it. I'm still going to speak up. Great. But make sure you think through all of the outcomes, mostly the bad. If you have chosen number three, to just leave, sometimes the right answer is just to leave. It is absolutely okay to prioritize your mental and psychological safety over, quote, getting ahead. Find a better job. Be more thorough in getting to know your team. Like me going into a job search, again, is Jen going back into the workplace? It's like the million-dollar question. I keep saying it's just a problem for future Jen. I'm going to let pressure help me decide when that comes. But I know for sure the next step that I take, the next company I go to, I will be scrutinizing in the type of people that I am working with. I will spend time getting to know these people, getting to know all of their quirks, their priorities, their personality types. So I know for sure what I'm getting into. Pick your direct manager with scrutiny. This is a big tip that I have for anyone that's going through the job search right now. Your direct manager can really shield you from a lot of toxicity, or they can just blast you with it. Your direct manager is like a throttle, and you really want to pick that with scrutiny. You want to pick a good direct manager. And even if the company isn't great or the pay isn't great and you're prioritizing psychological health, your direct manager is a huge contributor to that. And accept the sheen, that the sheen will wear off. Like any new company you join is going to be better than the toxic leadership you're experiencing. But there are always just honeymoon phases. Like each company will have its own particular set of toxicity, its own, you know, same toxicity, different font. Each company is going to have that. And you accepting that of like, there is no perfect company, there is no perfect leader, will help you in your next kind of step in choosing where you want to go. Making these choices in your career, right? Door number one, two, or three. Should you leave? Should you stay? How long should you stay? Should you speak up? Should you say something? Should you report it to HR? These are scary and heavy and loaded choices. And I do want to make an episode about this on navigating your career, so I'll probably do that. But it's normal to struggle with these decisions. It is, because they're high stakes decisions. They dictate for a lot of us, or our job dictates for a lot of us, our sense of safety, security, and joy. So you panicking over whether you should stay at that company for another 3 months to get your bonus or to vest your stock or leave, they're heavy. It's a heavy choice. But I will say, I have made a lot of choices in my career to stay, to go, to speak up. And they've ended in, you know, varying levels of success with what my expectation was. But none of them have led to irrevocable lasting damage to me or my career. Like, I think sometimes we think about these choices as like, I'm either going to Wyoming or New York. And they're huge decisions. And you're like, will I ever get back from New York, or will Wyoming change me as a human? Like, you think about that. These decisions in your career really are like, am I taking a step toward the left or a step toward the right? Like, they're smaller steps than we think. And they're not irreversible, and they don't have that much gravity. Corporate life is just a multi-phase survivor challenge. And you adapt. You adapt at every step, whatever step you choose. Toxic leadership is tough and kind of unavoidable. But I do think there is some freedom in that. There is freedom in radical understanding of where you end and others begin. There is freedom in letting go of everything you can't control. So once you've identified toxic leadership, there is merit to all three paths forward that we discussed. No one is better than the other, and you can choose. You have full control and power in that decision, and none of them are going to be catastrophic. If you have a really toxic leadership team and you stay for another 3 months, so your stock vests, not a life-ending decision. If you decide to leave and not have your stock vest, again, won't be a life-ending decision. So whatever you choose is right. And it's okay for you to choose any of those and to feel good about them. Also listening to Taylor Swift's Karma helps me. Karma is a cat praying in my lap because it loves me. Okay, I'll see you next week.